Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to another episode of Early Work, the podcast in which I, Rhys James, will speak to someone from the entertainment industry about all the stuff that they wrote when they were ideally a teenager or before they're doing the job they are now that they're hopefully embarrassed about. And then I'll read one of mine to level the playing field. This week we had Nick Helm, a guest I've been trying to get on for ages. He's exactly the sort of person who would have loads of this stuff, and I was correct. The man is a walking back catalogue of all different sorts of sort of very dark things. On this podcast, he read us poems, he did lyrics, a short story, and that was, we didn't scratch the surface of the stuff he had. He brought his laptop and you could see that it was weighing him down. He was trying to search through the files. He couldn't even find stuff because it was just like, there was just too much to even bother going through the clutter, as he described it. But he was an absolutely wonderful guest. So I very much hope you enjoy this episode as we delve slightly into the world of a younger Nick Helm. Welcome to the show. Today's guest, Nick Helm, who probably to the listeners best known for the episode of his podcast that I was on. Is that, would you agree with that?
Do you know what? I get stopped in the street all the time about that. It's so weird. Yeah.
They just, what, because you're walking around talking and they recognise the voice?
That's right. I talk all the time.
What are you saying? I've heard you interviewing Rhys James.
Hang on a minute, that probably sounds familiar.
I've heard that. On Fan Club.
Yeah, that's right. But also, I do carry a recording of your voice along with me.
Oh, that'll be it.
Just to prompt people. It's not necessarily my voice that people recognise. It's your voice.
Right. And then use that to say, oh, I have met him.
You know, I have met him and I have interviewed him. And they go, go on.
And the downloads through the roof.
I get their email and then I forward them a link to my, it's a radio show really, and then a podcast. But
oh, the old fashioned way, eh? I see. Some of us cut out the middleman. Don't want to waste time with that.
I do door to door sales. We don't even air it.
Nick, you're one of the first people I wanted to come on this podcast because it's all about being creative when you were younger.
Can I ask a question?
No, I'll finish. Thank you. Yes, go on. What would you like?
How many episodes are you into this podcast?
I don't know, as far as the listener is concerned.
Because I have been available.
Three. This is the third. The third recording.
Oh, cool. Right. Yeah, sure. Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I texted you quite early into the process. You couldn't do the earlier date.
I'm not sure that's true. Oh, it's last week, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, congratulations on your new podcast.
Like, you were on tour.
People were stopping me in the street saying, I recognise your voice.
Exactly. I'll carry on a recording of you. Yeah. You were on tour, you said. You said, once that finishes, you can start looking through some stuff. It'll be easier. Yeah. How was your tour? Is it finished?
I think we're on hiatus. So I've done the first leg of the tour. And then we've added some extra dates, so I'm going to do them in the spring.
Do you like touring?
Yes.
Diplomatic.
No, I do. I just swallowed it at the wrong point. I love touring. I did a gig last night, and oh,
A normal gig. A mixed bill gig.
You know, it was a work in progress gig in London. Work in progress gig in London. And you'd have to swear.
Yeah. I've got no issue with it.
It's fucking hard to get audiences in central London to a work in progress gig. But I sort of wanted to do a work in progress gig because I've been on tour and I've been developing this show since March. So like 8 months of doing the same material, variations of it. And so to go and say something else was exciting.
But that's what I mean. So you're a very creative person. There are plenty of comedians who, while currently on their tour, will just be like, mate, I'm not writing anything new. I'll just do my tour. And they wait till that has been put to bed and then a month and then they'll start writing new stuff.
Yeah, I'm not. But you got that prolific.
No, but you get an itch, and you want to put stuff in. You're doing a December work in progress in central London.
Oh yeah, but I didn't do a long work in progress, and it was as a favour to a friend.
Oh right.
And I did start thinking. My tour show that I've done is the best show that I've. I mean, I've been writing shows since 2001, and it's the best show I think I've written. I'm really, in terms of stand-up, I've been writing stand-up since 2009, like hours. It's the best show I've written in 10 years. Really, really proud of it. But then you are left with the, Jesus Christ, fucking hell, what have I done? How am I going to do another one?
Yeah.
And I'm literally just sitting there going, "I not just because it's so good, how am I going to top it? But like I said what I wanted to say for a long time.
Yeah.
And then it's just kind of like, well, what am I going to do? Fart jokes now.
Yeah.
It's like, I've said
something. And is that what you did at this work in progress? Mostly sound effects?
Mainly sound effects. Yeah, I thought, you know what? I've talked about my mental health now. So what I'll do is channel my love for the Police Academy film. And I went back and I was just doing Michael Winslow impressions.
Great.
Which is weird because he's an impressionist.
He's doing impressions.
He's not doing impressions of people is the thing. He's doing impressions of things.
Helicopters.
Popcorn machines.
Yeah. So you're doing an impression of him doing an impression.
He's doing
of
impressions
a microwave.
Of voices going through specific microphones.
There you go.
Amazing.
There's so many levels to this. Yeah. I'd go and watch that show. I think it's the best stuff you've ever written, actually.
Well, you didn't go and watch that show because he did it at the Edinburgh Festival.
No, I would go and watch you doing that show.
Oh, right,
I don't want to see him do that show.
No, sure. I saw him do a show. And I went with my girlfriend at the time. We were very cynical. And we both left crying. It was incredible.
Oh, really? Genuinely? Yeah. He takes you on a journey?
We were like, oh, we're going to go and see the guy from Police Academy. And then at the end, we just left and we found it very, very emotionally moving.
Is it moving?
It was the night we saw it. I mean, I don't know what he does. Well, I mean, he does the same thing every night.
Yeah, there's no
I'm
way
sure he's been
that.
Doing the same thing every night for the last 30 years. But he did, like, a Louis Armstrong bit at the end. What a Wonderful World. And fucking hell,
cheap shot. Everyone knows what that's going to do.
Yeah, but it's all manipulation, isn't it? And
yeah.
It was really good. I'm crying thinking about it.
Oh,
like we literally we got out and we were both crying and we just thought, fucking hell, Police Academy's just made us cry.
Mm. Great. Were you creative when, like you said, you've been writing stuff since 2001? How old are you, 2001? You don't have to say.
I was 20.
20. And were you creative before
well,
that?
I was 20 to 21.
Were you creative before you hit 20 when you were a teenager?
Yeah, I've always been creative.
What sort of stuff would you write when you were younger?
Well, I didn't. Well, that's the thing. I've always been creative in some capacity. So I used to draw.
Yeah.
And I used to be really good at drawing. And then I stopped. I think it was because A-level art just sort of like beat it out of me.
Yeah.
And it was something that I loved doing, but I was no good at the coursework or the prep work or anything. So I could sit down and I could do an exam and I could do really well in the exam. But what I didn't want to do is do lots of kind of like sketches to build up to the exam and to fill up a portfolio. So I'd be like, I'll do it if I... It's a bit like Edinburgh. It's like, I'm not going to write an hour if I don't need to, but
yeah.
If I've got Edinburgh coming up, I'll do an hour, right? And it'll be good. And then, but I'm not going to write lots of, you know... progressively better and better, different hours, taking different, you know, I suppose that is what work in progress is in the art world, isn't it?
That it's is like, you filling a sketchbook of
like little sketches little and like studies. So I suppose I do that.
You're doing
now.
The coursework. You did the coursework last night.
I did it.
With all your sound effects.
But the artwork is kind of like, so I used to draw all the time because I loved it. And I used to draw comic books and stuff. And it wasn't just like, oh, I like comic books, but I used to draw comic books and I used to do oil painting and stuff like that. But when I was very little, I used to sort of like paint, and my dad was always into. See, I don't have a football dad.
Well, if I were to guess what you were like at school, and I am going to because it's the first format point of this show, and this album been influenced by what you said.
I feel like I've cut into your intro.
Not at all. That, if anything, you've proven me right. It literally says, I've written it down. It says, enigmatic, a few very close friends but preferred to keep yourself to yourself, bonded with people over what at that age would be considered niche interests.
Is this me at school?
This is me guessing what you like at school.
Oh, right, yeah, because I'm desperately lonely now.
The last thing that says... No, but I would assume that you're always the opposite of what you were at school. I mean, it's been proven wrong on this podcast a number of times, but the last thing I've written is bad at football. And the only reason I wrote that is because when I was at school, so much of social standing depended on whether or not you were good at football, and that was basically it. It was whether in the male world, it was whether you're good at football or not.
Sure.
It decided on whether or not you were just like, I'm just going to chill out on my own or
I
not.
I think that continues into adult life.
Really? You think it's all about whether you're good at football, whether you're into football?
Yeah.
I think really?
Absolutely. Well, you're into football, aren't you?
Yeah.
So you've never even experienced what it's like not to know anything about football. I worked in a pub. And it was literally, I've been in taxi.
All anyone brings up
set
is football.
With Romesh.
Romesh.
Ranganathan.
Oh, yeah.
And so we were filming Reluctant Landlord, Series 2. And Nigel Havers was the guest star. Massive fan of Nigel Havers. Mm-hmm. Grew up watching Nigel Havers on TV.
Is he your football, really?
No. But I mean, but massive fan. And he's on set. And I think I should go over and I should say something to Nigel Havers. You know. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Got nothing to say. And I'm just like, what are you going to say? I could go over and I could say, oh, big fan. And then where does that go?
Yeah, that
and
puts then, you on a certain level,
and
though,
I'm
doesn't
standing
it?
Standing there just like going, I don't know what to say tonight. And then Romesh comes in, you know, because he's been in hair and makeup for fucking hours.
Secrets of the trade.
He's white in real life. He's been in hair and makeup for hours and hours. And he goes straight up to Nigel Havers. He goes, oh, nice to meet you, Nigel. Yeah, what's your team? And then they talk for like 15, 20 minutes. And
no way there, did he go, say, what's your team, by way of intro.
Yeah, he did. And you just like go, I mean, he's just got confidence. And I think that's the thing. I've been in, my mum and dad, they watched like the World Cup and stuff like that. Mm. But they were never really into football. My dad was into sort of like classical music and opera music and art. And he was a musician and he encouraged us to draw. And he liked sort of like poetry and stuff. And he always took us, because we grew up in London, so in Finsbury Park. And so we always used to go to the Barbican on like a Saturday. And we used to take part in kind of like fancy dress competitions where you had to meet your own friends. And, do you know what I mean? It was always just sort of like creative stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's just sort of like, my mate's dad's into like war and football, and you'd go around to their houses and they would beat you up and you'd be like, what's this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Horrible.
Christmas present for a dad of a certain generation is a book about World War II. It's the most bankable. Either it's a book about the team, the history of the team they support. Like if I'm buying something for my girlfriend's dad, it's either Aston Villa or World War Two.
See, my dad's into World War Two as well, which is weird. But I think there's also a huge difference between Masters of the Universe and G.I. Joe. And Masters of the Universe is set on a fantasy planet with swords and sorcerers, and it's science fiction and fantasy. And G.I. Joe is shooting people, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of like, so even that, I'd go around and they'd have kind of like Action Man and G.I. Joe and stuff like that. And it would all be like shooting each other. And then I'd have like Masters of the Universe and Teenage Mutant Hero Turtles and stuff, and it would be all kind of like fantasy and comedy and... It was just sort of like, they were sort of like, they're plastic toys, but they do spark off different parts of your
brain.
And
were you considered, because you had that sort of stuff, were you considered to be weird? Because you, even though they're the same thing.
Not in London, but then I moved to St Albans when I was about 7 or 8, and then...
Different world.
That's when, I hated...
I grew up around there.
Where did you grow up?
Harpenden.
Fuck me.
The next town along.
Were you born there?
No, Swindon. But I was there from before I went to school. I was in Harpenden.
I think it's like, you can be creative and be born in St Albans or Hertfordshire, and then you just, it's like a frog in water, you know? And you're just sort of like, you're brought up to the boil if you're born there. But if you were born somewhere else and you're dropped in there, all it is skinny white boys that like playing football. But they're not football. There's like 18, 19, 30 boys all running around like a flock of birds around a pitch chasing one boy at the front with the football. It's not a football match.
Yeah, it's a conga.
And it was just like, and it was kind of like, and I wasn't, I was into sort of like using my, you know, I'd play make-believe and stuff like that. I mean, I was very...
So what you're saying is that I'm correct.
Yeah, I was very...
the first bit, enigmatic, well, like to keep yourself to yourself, but a few very close mates, that load of bollocks?
No, I would say that is fairly all wrong. I wouldn't consider my enigmatic, I would say naive.
Right, in what sense?
Just that, you know, I assumed people were nice. I assumed that people weren't going to beat the shit out of you, like mentally and physically, every day of your life. So, you know, I had friends, but I felt very lonely. And then I got to about halfway through secondary school, and I stopped hanging around with all of the people that were the bullies. Basically, you hang around with the bullies so you don't get bullied. But what you find out actually is that you do get bullied. You get bullied every day.
It's in a slightly subtler way.
So I stopped hanging around their enemy. And I started hanging around with the art department. And
when you say department,
Mr. Ball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
And Miss Bright. I started hanging around at the art department, and then there were like kids from all different years that were basically all the outcasts from their years. But they were like 3 years above us, and they were all going to the pub drinking and stuff. And he's just like, hang on a minute. So we'd all start going out on Friday and Saturday night. And then you realise, you know, it's like they're all the shaggers, you know. So we're all like going out, and like, you know, we're like 14, 15.
Oh, wow. So you unlocked this secret.
Yeah,
so like
everyone that was a bully in our year group stayed within their year group. But when you kind of like were like outcasts from your year group, there'd be like three from each year. And then you'd all be, and it was all the really good looking girls that, you know, were doing drama or artistic stuff, but weren't kind of like into kind of like meatheads. And then it'd all be kind of like, and then you'd be
this
like,
is such
oh
a
my
film.
God.
There's something so cinematic about this story.
Yeah, but it was sort of like, and so then all of a sudden I started doing drama and art and English and like writing stuff. And I was in a couple of bands. And then I started writing stuff, and then I did one absolutely spectacularly awful audition for The Crucible. I was in like a couple of plays, did an audition for The Crucible. It was so bad because it was like a Plymouth American accent, and I couldn't do the accent, and my teacher shouted at me in front of like a whole room full of people. I just said, and I was like, okay, you can shout at me. I don't think my services are required for this particular role. I think you'll find someone a bit better at it than me. And I was like, and then I walked
it's
out.
Such a weird tone for what you're saying.
Yeah, I was.
You're being really polite and diplomatic and self-effacing while also being like, I don't fucking need this,
exactly,
which is not at all
that's
magic.
That's exactly what I did. It was really, it shows my dramatic.
It's so confusing.
It was
yeah,
like,
yeah.
I think I'm going to take my
And that's called out. Juxtaposition,
it's
baby.
It's called passive aggression.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And I left and I didn't do the play that year. And then I was never good at auditions, and then I started writing stuff. And then that was when I became...
And would you perform the stuff you wrote at school? Ever?
You had to write... When you did drama, you did like an individual skill, and you did like a group project and an individual project. You have to pick like three disciplines. So I think I did set design, direction and writing. Right. And then I wrote a monologue and I directed it and performed it. And then we did like a group project. And I knew that I got 100%. I was the first kid in my school to ever get 100%, right? And then the next year they were giving them away, right? But I was the first kid in my school to get 100% for his individual skill, right? Which means that I did great. But my friend told me the other week that not only that, I scored the highest in the county.
Oh, wow.
And I didn't know that until like I was 19. So this is 20 years ago, and I didn't know that for 20 years, and I only found that out last week. And you know, I was just like, I'm still buzzing.
You seem so happy. Good Lord. So, do you think, this is a big question I like to ask, but I specifically want to ask it to you. Do you think your teenage self would be a fan of you now?
No.
Really?
No. Do you know what?
What were you into then?
Do you know what? So the thing is, we were into comedy. And we're into, you know, so me and my mate, we travelled to Watford, I think, to see Jack D, because he could drive.
And that's how we got to Watford to perform for you?
That's how we drove to Watford.
Coliseum?
I can't remember. But I do think I have the... I found the programme. I bought a programme for it. I found it at the weekend. I went to visit my family. And I found a Lee Evans programme as well. I saw him in London. It was when he did the first half was his old show and the second half was his new show.
Classic.
Or maybe it was the first half was his new show and the second half was his... I wouldn't have done it like that. I think old first.
Yeah, it's got to be the old one first.
But, yeah, so we're into comedy and stuff. So I used to watch sort of like stuff. I think, well, just as a capper to that, when we joined the drama club and then... So if you were really good and successful before the sixth form, you did sports. And then when we moved up to sixth form, we got taken on a... up to Edinburgh by our teacher to do the Edinburgh Festival over the summer. And then we went to see all the stand-up comedy. So Al Murray, Jason John Whitehead, and but like all of these comedians that when... you know, I saw Jason John Whitehead at the Tron, and that was where I performed my like first hour.
Mm.
And so, and Al Murray was all like audience participation. He got me up on stage and you go, oh, I like this.
Right,
yeah, so
right.
It's all of these things that happened over that summer. And when I came back, I was like... So maybe I would have liked me when I was a teenager.
Yeah,
I mean, I liked stuff like that. My favourite was Jack D, so I get the impression that if I was a teenager, I'd love Romesh.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I do.
Yeah.
I think he's incredible.
But as an adult, Romesh can go fuck himself.
Yeah, as an adult and someone that I've worked with, you know, and has made me stand awkwardly on set with Nigel Havers, he can absolutely go fuck himself.
Especially as all of Romesh's crowd work is just, what's your team?
Yeah,
and you're sat there going,
"What's your team?
Fuck
what's
off,
your kid?
Mate.
Have you got kids? Yeah, what's your favourite?
Yeah.
Come on, mate. But I think he's like our generation's Jet D. So I would say.
So you think he'd have been your favourite? If
yeah, mate.
Were
well,
you a
Jet
teenager
D was
now?
My
going
absolute
to...
favourite comedian.
Yeah.
Growing up. So yeah, and I liked Stuart Lee, but like Jet D was alternative comedy.
Right,
no,
yeah.
Do you know
yeah,
what
yeah.
I mean? It's just like now he's like an elder statesperson for what is mainstream.
Yeah.
But like in the 90s, it was just like, whoa, this is so left field. He's on Channel 4 at 10 o'clock on a Thursday night or a Friday night. You know, and it was new.
But you weren't yet writing stand up when you were going to see this stuff. You were writing other stuff still.
No, I started writing plays in 2001.
Right.
Space Odyssey.
Did you write that? I didn't know.
No,
you...
when I was watching 2001 A Space Odyssey, I started yeah. writing plays. I was thinking, oh my God.
It's a long fucking
this
film.
This is a long fair. Fucking boring film.
So what sort of stuff have you brought today?
I've bought my laptop.
I understand you've brought all sorts of stuff.
I've bought my laptop.
And that has everything.
It's got a lot of stuff. It hasn't got any of the handwritten stuff that I haven't typed up, but I've always been pretty good at typing stuff up.
So a lot of people don't keep it. So
I keep everything.
Yeah, so do I, but there's people I ask and they're like, mate, I've deleted all of that stuff.
No, so I can't delete stuff. I think one day I'm probably going to do something really good that people remember me by, and there's going to be some sort of museum and they're going to go, whoa, I wish we'd have paid attention earlier. Don't worry. He saved everything.
Nick, I think you're living it right now.
We've got all the flyers.
I think this podcast is the thing that's going to turn this into museum-worthy content.
Put it in a time capsule, bury it in the ground,
yeah.
and shoot it to the moon because someone's going to need to hear about it. Fucking... this is all... I mean, you know, I haven't really thrown anything out.
So what do you want to read?
None of it.
All right. Thanks for coming in, mate.
That's great.
Is there anything in particular that comes to mind?
Well, I'll do this one. Short story, right? It's called Malcolm and God. I haven't read it through like in a long time, but this is what it started out, right?
Malcolm and God, 22.
Can you see the light? What's that? I said, can you see the light? Oh, no. And that was how Malcolm met God, the God. God the Almighty, God the creator of the universe, God the epitome of kindness, and God the quiet tall gentleman who worked behind the counter at the local library. Malcolm had often admired Mr. Locrine. He had always embodied the intelligence and dignity, but Malcolm had rarely ever spoken to him aside from the usual pleasantries of hellos and goodbyes and the occasional negotiations over late fees. I mean, it's quite good.
It is, actually. I mean, it's nice. I'd love to keep going.
Not saying I'm J.K. Rowling, but fucking give me a book.
It is written on a napkin, to be fair.
It was a Friday after school on a rainy autumn day in a tiny little hamlet in Brixton. And as usual, Malcolm had headed straight to the library where he would stay for hours reading about things that he would never get the chance to experience firsthand, such as war, giving birth, and sex. Malcolm was 32 and worked at the local primary school, which was visible from the library through a thick foliage of brown and yellow leaves. He had trained to be a science teacher, but was utilised as an all-rounder at St. Julian's Meadow School for overexcited boys. Anyway, Malcolm was simply reading to himself in the library when the floor gave way and he fell very many feet, possibly hundreds, into an old well, which must have been built centuries ago and just covered over by the library planners. There he was in total darkness, up to his waist in ice-cold water. He hoped it was water. If not, then what? He began to imagine what he was now stood in, some sort of medieval septic tank surrounded by centuries of old fermented urine, and to be honest, this prospect was not an attractive one. With that, he decided to taste it just to make sure. He was wrong. It was water. Possibly the freshest water he had ever tasted unbottled. He stood there, wondering what to do next. It was so dark, he could only make out a few blurry, blotchy, bloppy shapes, and he couldn't even distinguish what they were. However, since he wasn't hurt, he was still fairly calm, but he was frightfully cold. So thought Malcolm, what now? And as if in answer to Malcolm's bewilderment, Mr. Locrine's voice echoed from a distant, undetectable direction. "Well then," Mr. Locrine continued, "open your eyes." And with that, Malcolm realised that he had had his eyes closed all along. And what he saw when he opened them was spectacular, to say the least. It really did have to be seen to be believed. And that's where I stopped.
Oh my God, what? That's the end of this document?
Yeah.
Do you remember what the ending is?
Literally.
The whole point of it is that it doesn't have an end, right?
It started with,
God.
Can you see the light?
Yeah.
And then
so
it
you
spiraled
did the
out of there to the fact that,
J.J. Abrams.
Well, why wouldn't he be able to see the light? Oh, he's fallen down a hole. And it turns out that his eyes were closed the whole
what
time.
What a reveal.
And then it's just like, and it must be called...
the twist.
And then it must be called, like, Malcolm and God, because it's about, can you see the light? And then it's just kind of like, it's bollocks.
The title makes it more pretentious than it had to be. So the title shows me where you were coming from. Do you know what I mean? It gives something away about you.
Malcolm and God was sort of like a personal story, personal title just for me.
So I liked, first of all, tall. God is tall. Big fan of that.
Yes.
Famously tall. I liked the God. God, the God, just in case there was any doubt.
Yeah, but that's not also saying it's a Christian God either. That's
No, I know that. I just
that's
mean...
That's open for...
I also like war, birth, sex.
Yeah.
The Holy Trinity.
I mean, that's a funny...
In a religious
that's
story.
That's a funny joke.
War, birth, sex, great stuff. Very pleased with the piss tangent.
Really?
A very, very needless tangent about... Oh, no, it was water. Turns out it was just water.
Yeah.
But maybe it's piss. Oh, no, it's water. And the freshest water, unbottled, that he has ever tasted.
Yeah. I mean, I like it.
It's really nice. It's a really nice short story. Did you do anything with that? Has anyone heard that except me?
No, that's the first time I've ever... that's the first time I read it in a very long time. And it's also first time that anyone else has ever read it.
Have you got any other stuff?
Just found this one, which is brilliant. And I should have done something with this. Oh, no, this isn't the brilliant one. Do you want to hear a poem? I must have been early 20s again.
Early 20s?
I know, it's not what you're looking for. You
Go
want
ahead.
Me to be shit and young. But in actual fact, it turns out I was a fucking genius when I was in my early 20s.
I want to hear it.
It's called Eyelash. She found an eyelash on my cheek and held it between her finger and thumb for me to blow. I made a wish and blew it. I wished for this to be real. Really real. I wished for this to be really real this time. Because I can't go through all this again. All this emotional admin. I held my eyes closed tight and blew.
Beautiful. It is genuinely beautiful.
That is, I think, I'm pretty sure, based on a Nick Hornby poem that he wrote for William Shatner off his album Has Been.
What? How similar is it to that?
It's not similar. It's based in the style of, you just sort of like, the way he narrated that was kind of like, you go, he like, Has Been. Have you ever heard Has Been?
No.
Has Been got me really into performance poetry. It's a William Shatner album that he made in the mid-2000s. Ben Folds produced it. And basically, I heard this album. He sings Common People on it by Pulp. And it's all like, William Shatner, Common People. And it gets you into it in an ironic way, which is actually quite genius. Because it's like classic William Shatner speak, singing something, someone else's stuff. He famously, cringingly sung a David Bowie song. Is it Ground Control to Major Tom? He did it at an awards ceremony, and then afterwards he tried to say, oh yeah, I was doing it ironically, but he wasn't.
Yeah.
And then 20 years later, he's done it again. 30 years later, he's done it again with Pulp. So it got everyone to be like, whoa, he's done it again. And then actually, when you get into the album, it's an incredible album. It's beautiful. It's just a beautiful album by a horrible man.
And you were... and that was what was inspiring you at the time for Eyelash, where you wished us for something to be real, really real.
Yeah.
That's deep. That's real. A deep phrase.
It's a little bit, it reminds me a little bit of Attack of the Clones, George Lucas's writing. I wish I could just wish it all away. You go, really? Wow, that's great.
really real. Really, really.
This is the thing that I wrote. I don't know when I wrote this. It's over maybe 20 years ago. Life is like a game of Russian roulette that you play with yourself every day. And sometimes it goes off.
What were you hoping for there? Bumper stickers?
No, it's funny. It's a wanking joke. It's brilliant.
Trying to get into the funny into greeting card market on a mug?
Yeah, I mean, I would have loved to.
Yeah,
have,
I still
if
would.
I could make a living off of doing that. But it turns out I can't make a living off of doing that. What they tend to do is just watch something I've done on telly and then put that on a greetings card, and I don't make any of the money off of it. and they get the context of it wrong. So this is one of the first songs I ever wrote. But I really should be playing it, shouldn't I? But, I mean, it's basic.
How old? 16?
I'd say 16.
What's this song called?
It's called Stolen Heart.
A good start.
Stolen Heart. I don't want to spoil the party, but I want you all to know I'm not letting go. I'm not letting go. I don't want to ruin this evening, but I want you all to see. She should be with me. She should be with me. You've all helped to commit the crime of my stolen heart. It's all gone beyond the line, torn my world apart. Torn my world apart. I don't want to break the fun up, but I want you all should hear. I think it should be, I think you all should hear. But I'm not gonna, yeah. She was very dear. She was very dear. Sorry if I'm dragging on now. It's a very short song, though, so you're not, Nick. Don't worry. Got plenty of time for a third verse, but he's wrapping up. Sorry if I'm dragging on now, but you don't know how I feel. This is very real. This is very real. You've all helped to commit the crime of my stolen heart. It's all gone beyond the line and torn my world apart. Torn my world apart. Oh, that brings it all back.
Absolutely wonderful.
Does bring it all back.
I've got a couple of things to pick up on. She was very dear. Doesn't really sound the sort of phrase a 16-year-old would say. Lovely old dear.
This is the root one, Robbie Williams.
Well, you've got to get the rhyme out.
Rhyming.
You've got to get the rhyme out, yeah. What are you on, Rhyme Zone? Was that around?
No, it wasn't. This was literally...
You had to do it yourself.
If it was Rhyme Zone, it would be fucking brilliant, mate, because you'd go, I'm not going to use dear.
You got multi-syllabic on Rhyme Zone. Yeah, dragging on. It really did start to drag, actually, for me at the end.
Oh, really?
No,
it was a very short one.
I love that you said... You've clearly got a motif in your writing of... you're obsessed with things being very real. You had very real in this, you had really real in the last one.
Sure.
Things got to be real to you.
I like reality. No.
And also, I like that you've spent a whole song telling us how you feel, and then at the end you say, you don't know how I feel.
Yeah. Well, I think that the thing is...
Bit of self-deprecation in the song.
Yeah, but your thing is you can listen to the song for years and years and not realise what the lyrics mean.
And do you think that about that?
No, I think it's pretty much...
Yeah, you want to be with her. That's what it means, isn't it?
Yeah, but also I think it was probably a direct attack at a group of friends that I was with at the time.
Right.
I think it wasn't like...
It was no metaphor in there.
It's not like
it was a diary.
Oh, I use my imagination to like see how this bella fella who is in love with a girl, and it's like no, this is very.
This is what happened.
This is very real. This is how I feel.
I'm going to rate it now. I'm going to rate that one.
Oh yeah, we have been rating the others.
I'll give you an overall rating if you like. Mm. So first category is originality out of 5. you've just held up a 5 and a 1.
I was a hand, and then it was.
Oh right. Well, no. I'll give you more than that. There were
51.
51. William Shatner is an influence on you, but I wouldn't have known that if you hadn't told me.
I don't think William Shatner was an influence on
me. Not on
then.
This one. No.
One.
This one, you were inspired purely by what you were literally looking at.
It's just raw emotions.
Yeah.
Typed.
It does feel
fucking...
like a 16-year-old's angst.
Yeah.
It's very. She should be with
they
me.
Are, they are.
I'll give you a 2.
Oh, I think that's generous.
Oh, do you?
I do. I think the rhyming is awful.
No, because it's a song. I was hearing it as a poem. Because it's a song and you've got the repetition, I wouldn't expect that from a 16-year-old.
But it's one of nice those things of... where when I, like, as a songwriter now, I always try and do something that's... And there are some rhymes where I go, ooh, I don't want to make that rhyme. And I'll always try and find a better rhyme. And when I hear... like successful songs that kind of
say she was very dear.
You go, what the fuck are you thinking?
Yeah, how have you shout
that's
that out?
Absolutely awful.
You're
song.
Up for putting that out there, but it is original for a 16-year-old to do that. So that's
I
where
think
the extra
that you've
point
got to
comes
get
from.
Through all of that, this is like your apprenticeship, isn't it?
Sure. Pure teen horniness. 5.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an absolute 5. there's no margin of error there, is it?
Finally.
It's one of the horniest things I've ever heard in my life.
Oh, that's good.
Is that eyelash? We don't know what the well was a metaphor for. That could be pretty much anything. Mm. Entering a well. So, pure teen, pretty horny teen. I mean, you weren't a teen in 2 of those things, but it's good that you carried it over. The horniness so strong, it carried over into your early 20s. And the last one is the Mickey Mouse Club / Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score. How much potential does it show of the future star that you've become? I would say a couple of tweaks, you could do that song on stage.
I think you could. And actually, I want to do, because I've got like lots of songs from when I was a teenager. I want to do an album called Old School, where I basically just record all of my songs that I wrote when I was younger. Because
that's
basically,
got to be on there.
I haven't released an album in a couple of years. I've got one coming out, and I just thought I can knock out another one really quickly if I just use old songs.
If you just, you just go through your documents.
Yeah.
Is a lot of you'll get to it, and you go, it's too cluttered. I can't be asked.
No, all of the songs. I'm quite good with.
Oh, the songs are all done, are they? They're in a folder.
I like to know how many songs I've written.
Right. Well, I'll give you a 5 for the Ryan Gosling, Ryan Goose score, because I think you could get away with that.
Okay.
Tweak that. You in an audience member's face saying she should be with me. I think it would. It represents something. It represents potential, at least.
All right.
When you were talking about how Don't Fall In Love With Me, people would just laugh at you when you did that. If you put that into a play, people would laugh at it.
No, Don't Fall In Love With Me was intentionally funny, but that was kind of like you go, oh, right, I'll write something that sounds so sincere that it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And then,
if you presented that as fully sincere, then it would be funny, which you did, and it was. I will now read you one that you can to level the playing field so you can score. This is called No Girls Allowed. The Girls has a Z on it. It was 2008. I was 17. and I'll give you some context afterwards.
I'll give you some context. I had been a stand-up comedian for 2 years.
Is it lonely on that high horse of yours, where thought before tears is naught? Of course, your allies all scorn and snort because your tear tracks run as clear as that vodka was. Is it lonely to be your domestic dictatorship, where troops are sent out on a whim because you felt like it, and truth comes around just like lies had to play this trick, retreat to a more tranquil Smirnoff away from it? Is it lonely down in that thoughtless room where trinkets of reason begin to bloom and suddenly it sinks as you perforate clues, your eyes light and realise maybe it was you? Now, that was written on Halloween. And I had an argument with a girl called Kirsty at a party, and I went home. And most people have an argument with someone at 17 and they just get angry or call them a bitch or something. I went home and wrote that.
Have you ever seen Hot Rod?
No.
Oh, there's a bit when he gets so angry that he dances it out.
It's like that's what I needed
to do. It's like he does a little dance in the woods. I think it's based on a bit in Footloose where Kevin Bacon gets so angry he does a little dance.
Yeah,
and you go, and you weren't a dancer, you were a poet.
I danced with words.
So you went home and you wrote. I think that the context of it makes it really funny. But
I was so angry, and I wrote, and it was like her and her mates. We'd had like fallen out. We had a thing, I think, at that age. And then, like, I'd had a... At this party, something went wrong with her and her mates and they were all angry at me for something. And I went around... But the smugness of... Is it lonely on that high horse
that's
of yours?
That's funny, but also...
It's
the way
a 17-year-old.
The way you deliver it is also funny, right? That's, because you're delivering it with
new
disdain,
context.
Right? For something that you are sort of ashamed of. But in actual fact, that is an excellent poem.
Oh, come on. No, it's not.
But that's the thing about poetry. I, like a lot of people, can't tell the difference between good and bad poetry.
Yeah.
So you can basically get away with any old shit.
What about the bit where I invent the word perforate? I think I was reaching for percolate,
sure,
which is still the incorrect word.
Perforate, actually, when you say perforate, it sounds like a Mr. Snuffleupagus kind of word. It sounds like kind of cute, actually.
To give myself too much credit, it's like I was trying to reach for this, like, wordplay about perfume, but I'm not. I was thinking...
I've really got no
I learned
excuse
the word,
because you had the internet when you wrote that.
I learned the word percolate from the OC, but I obviously thought he said perforate for years, and I used it in poetry for years.
Yeah, but, I mean, these things are time capsules, and I wouldn't change that.
I accept really... no blame, do I? Maybe it was you. They're all angry at me, and the whole end of this is take a look at yourself on your high horse, down in that domestic dictatorship.
But it could be about anything, couldn't it?
No, but it isn't. It's about Kirsty.
I thought it was about Girls Aloud.
Yeah.
I thought it was about the band Girls
It's weird
Aloud.
That it's not about Girls Aloud.
And so when you look at it in that, if you don't know the context for it, the thing about it is your art ceases to be your own as soon as you release it to the public. So they can take anything they want.
So now that it's finally released to the public...
It can be about anything. So you can say, I wrote it angry on Halloween about a specific girl, but they're going to take it and they're going to...
They can say it's about the Iraq War.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fair enough. In many ways, it is. No Girls Allowed. Need the scores for that from you. Originality,
5. I mean, you added a Z. You didn't even spell stuff the way it was meant to be spelled.
I invented words, to be fair. Pure teen horniness.
Doesn't sound particularly horny. Sounded particularly... I think horniness is the opposite end of the spectrum.
Rage, though.
It's angry. Rage.
Where did that come from, though?
Minus what? 5. It's,
really?
It's the polar opposite.
Okay. Some people would interpret that sort of rage as the manifestation of horniness and frustration.
I think that's an uncomfortable...
It's a dangerous conversation to have.
To go down.
Mickey Mouse Club, Ryan Gosling, Ryan Gooskill, what potential does it show for who I became?
I don't think your style has changed that much.
This is the unfortunate thing I've learned doing this, is that everyone goes, yeah, that could be your act.
I think you could do that. And with some tweaks, if you added a couple of kind of like jokes in there, then, you know. Or if you, like I say about tone, if you really like amped it up, that first line is so sort of like, who does he think he is?
Yeah.
But, I think 5. I mean,
5.
You can absolutely tell that, maybe it's because you read it. You do have a distinct thing about you.
What, that I say smug shit like, is it lonely on that high horse of yours?
Yeah, but I mean, poetry comes across as smug sometimes, doesn't it? And by that I mean your poetry.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I got 10. You gave me 10. Despite getting...
Didn't I give you 15?
No, minus 5.
Minus 5. No, so I gave you 5 then, didn't I?
So overall,
I gave you 5.
If you add
minus
them up,
five,
out of 15.
And then 5.
Yeah,
so
10 out of
15.
10 out of... Oh, yeah, of course it's 5. Of course it's 5.
5 out of 15.
Yeah, I was creative. It wasn't a maths. 5 out of 50, that's the lowest I've scored so far.
Is it really?
Yeah.
But you've got to understand that out of 10, you scored 0 because I'm using the 5 and the minus 5. But out of 10, you would have scored
You got 12.
10.
You got 12, so you win. But
I think that's... Well, I don't like the competitive element.
Yeah, but we're both losers. That's the important bit.
Yeah.
That's the whole message.
Yeah.
Do you have anything that you'd like to read to play us out that we can beef up with some music or something?
Do you want me to? Yeah, you do. I'm going to do this thing, but it's dark. It's really dark.
Good.
But I think it's also meant to be funny. I must have written it over... I must have written it about 20 years ago.
Wow.
But you say wow. I was still...
What were you, 19?
I was 19. I must have been old. I must have been about 21, so maybe like 17, 18 years ago.
Okay.
This is 2000. Before the Twin Towers fell.
Yeah.
You've
got
to Lord of the Rings,
using
part
yeah, yeah,
two.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. It's called It Passes. I've never read this before.
Do you feel nervous?
I feel... I don't think it's cringy. I think it's, like, really, like, personal. And maybe it's, like, too You guys aren't ready for it. But
you don't have to do anything you don't want except read this poem.
All right, I'll read a poem. Right. Sometimes I find it difficult to breathe. Not difficult to breathe as in a respiratory problem, like I've just been for a run or been punched hard in the chest. But sometimes the weight of the world pushes down on my lungs like a fat man, and I just don't have the energy to inhale. It passes. It passes. Sometimes it feels like I was an accident and born into the wrong species. I see people walking hurriedly around, dancing to their own set agenda, and I find it hard to associate their bodies with mine. And I begin to realise that we're all just droplets of rain on the same almanac, and it takes a lot of us to make a puddle. But in the end, who really wants to be a puddle? It passes. It passes. Sometimes when I leave the house, I look in the mirror and I ask myself, would I be happy dying in these clothes? And if the answer is no, I go back upstairs and change my trousers. I long to feel a part of the world and not, as is increasingly the case, a single isolated pea on a plate of carrots. Sometimes when I get dressed in preparation to go out into the world and put on my trousers and socks, t-shirt and shoes, I also put on a smile that makes social interaction acceptable and instantness, allowing me to pass unnoticed through my daily grind. Sometimes, distracted and deep in concentration, I forget all about my smile, that it isn't really real and is imprisoned on the public cell of my mouth. I worry and hurry back from my distractions in order to maintain my smile, only to find that even without my concentration, it is still exactly where I left it. It passes. It passes. Sometimes I wake up in bed in the morning, and rather than get up instantly, I lie there, allowing the hours to wash over me like hot chocolate until the sky gets dark again and the streetlight outside my window comes on. I concentrate on returning myself to a state of normalcy, and it is these moments of solitude, basking in my own glorious company, that I finally feel that I am a part of the world, and not, as is increasingly the case, like a single isolated pea on a plate of carrots. Repetition. It passes. It passes. Sometimes I consider sticking my head in the oven, turning up the gas and breathing in the fumes as I drift peacefully off to the next plateau, where I can finally be reunited with the serenity I so fondly crave. But as I only have a conventional oven and it's rather small, the prospect of cooking my head in a claustrophobic environment never really sells itself to me, and I instead decide to brood on the moors wearing black flannel shirts. It passes. It passes. Sometimes my toast gets stuck in the toaster, so I unplug it, take it upstairs with an extension cord, run a bath, sit in it with the live toaster held out at arm's length over the water until my arms get tired or the toaster gets too hot to hold, and I drop it into the water, electrocuting myself. in the end, I usually have a change of heart. Sometimes my toast gets stuck in the toaster. I grab a knife and stick it in the slot and waggle it until the toast can be removed. If this does not work, I shake the toaster upside down, sprinkling crumbs all over the kitchen surface. The toast remains in place because it is stuck, and disheartened by the mess, I unplug the toaster. I've done like variations on this. It passes. I am a packet of crisps. When I am opened, I am half empty and crumbly inside. Life is a window on a wall of nothingness. And sometimes, just sometimes, it's raining outside.
I don't know what to say, I mean. What an honour to be in the presence of both a pea on a plate of carrots and a packet of crisps.
Oh,
and someone who likes to wear multiple black flannel shirts.
I think that there are some
different days.
There are some pretty... I think the thing is, you can see why I ended up shouting at people in the audience, because I tried being subtle. There's some subtle jokes.
Yeah.
Right? There's some things that are like subtly funny. The oven one is funny.
Yeah.
But it's dark. And I think that you go, oh, this isn't working. Oh, I guess
fuck
I
you
go,
lot.
What? And then, you know, you end up... The audience really dictates the sort of comedian they want you to be.
Yeah, and you think it's
me.
Not.
They didn't want me
they
to
wanted
be
you to be
guy.
A carrot.
They wanted me...
they just wanted a carrot in a line of carrots.
Pea.
They want an isolated
come
pea.
Come on, carrot.
Nick Helm, thank you so much for coming in and revealing how you became a carrot. I hope you don't feel too awkward about the whole experience.
No, really, I liked it. I liked talking to you, and I found it interesting. Probably my least favourite part of it was listening to your poem.
But, me too.
No, I loved it. I thought it was really great. Yeah, good. Congratulations with this show, mate. I hope it takes off.
There you go. That was Nick Helm and his various weird vegetable-based poetry and stories. What an interesting man he has been for over 20 years. I'm sure he won't mind me saying. Well, 39 years. We'll say 39 years. Why not? Obviously, Nick, you can check out all his sort of stuff. He's on tour, second leg of the tour. He's released an album, a fresh new album for 2020. He told me to mention that some of his best stuff is on Netflix, although it is from 6 or 7 years ago. A distant memory. But check all that stuff out, obviously, and subscribe to the podcast. Leave it a review if you liked it, or if you don't, I don't know, it might be quite funny. If you've got any early work you want to send us, send it to earlywork@gmail.com, and maybe I'll read it out if I remember to check that email address, which so far I have not. As ever, I am on tour. Make sure you come to that. Tickets at reesejames.co.uk. Thanks again for listening, and I will see you next time.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.